It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to have two great news people. Philip Manning from KTNA. Welcome, Philip.
Pleasure to be here, Mike.
And Zaz Hollander from the ADN. Welcome, Zaz.
Good morning.
So today, I thought we could begin, Philip, since we have you on the line, with a look at Talkeetna. I know that Talkeetna has been a destination over time for tourists and others, but I know that recently the Democratic Party of Alaska had its meeting up there, and that happened a couple of weeks ago almost. Was there much interest in that? This is the first time it's happened in Talkeetna, or did you touch it in any way?
It's the first time I'm aware of it happening in Talkeetna, and I did head out there and do some interviews, and there was quite a bit of local interest. We've discussed on the show before that as far as voting precincts go, if you look at a colorized electoral map, Talkeetna often looks like a little spot of blue. And when I spoke with Casey Steinow, the Democratic Party chair, she said that, you know, that's often intentional as far as where they pick where their convention is going to be. They sometimes will try to pick places where they know they've got some support, but also trying to fly the flag a little bit in hopes of maybe attracting more folks.
Any takeaway? In part, I raise this question because what is fascinating, and I believe there's been an article recently, I think it was in the ADN, that spoke to the complexity these days of having a run-up to a primary where you have people who are independents going to be running on the ballot with officially designated Democratic candidates, and what happens depending upon the result of the balloting. We've had the example in the past of Senator Murkowski running by herself, but now we have both at the top of the state ticket with an independent governor running with a Democrat lieutenant governor partner, and then we have tickets where we have Alice Galvin, who is an independent, and Dimitri Thane as a Democratic candidate. Any discussion about that complexity?
Well, as far as the party officials go, they seemed pretty excited about it, just as a way to become a bigger tent for their primary. And I was able to talk to Lieutenant Governor Malott while he was here about that. And, you know, there's a really interesting dynamic there in that it was his offices and his decision initially to reject the ability for independents to run in that primary that led to the court case and that sort of thing. And then, of course, ultimately, his running mate, Governor Walker, has decided to do exactly that and run in the Democratic primary. But from the party itself, yeah, they're very much interested in getting more people involved and not only being able to vote, since they've had an open primary for some time now as far as voting goes, but as far as actually being able to run. And Jay Parmley, the executive director for the party, one of the takeaways I got from him was that, you know, you can't win a race that you're not in. And so step one, in his view, is just having a candidate on the ballot. And even if they don't have a D after their name, I think the Democratic Party is interested in having fewer uncontested races.
Well, thank you very much. Zaz, any comment at all about this topic?
No, I haven't done any reporting on that topic.
Okay. So continuing on, just as we're on a Talkeetna run here, are there issues that have popped up in Talkeetna that are front and center of interest as the larger tourist season begins?
Well, now that the train is running again, that issue has been cleared up. But for a while there was definitely some strong local interest in what was going on with the Alaska Railroad after an ice jam caused some delays and damage to the Alaska Railroad tracks north of here, up near Curry, at about rail mile 250.
Right.
And the timing of that, actually, if it was going to happen, the timing kind of worked out. There was one passenger train that had, the folks on that had to be diverted to buses to be taken to Denali and Fairbanks, but that was the last, they call it the Aurora train in the winter, and then the next passenger trip wasn't scheduled until Wednesday with the first Denali Star train. So they were able, if it was going to happen, it kind of happened at the right time, I guess, because they were able to get things back up and running by then.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, I know that there had been previous talk about the timber business in the area up north. Any activity or further action involving the timber sales and all?
The next step on that, as far as I'm aware, is the public noticing of the transportation permit plan, which I have not seen yet. To be fair, I haven't checked the public notices this morning.
Okay.
I've been checking it pretty regularly. That's the next step on that, and there's a 30-day public comment window attached to that.
Okay. And as spring has come, sometimes in the past there have been opportunities for water to flow where it might cause some problems in Talkeetna. What's the state of the river?
It's gone up, of course, which is normal this time of year. There hasn't been too much concern about flooding other than, you know, when there was word of an ice jam up a river, there was some natural concerns like, okay, well, is something going to form down here that's going to cause a problem? That was not the case. However, once that ice jam let go and the full ice out happened on the Susitna River, if you went down the main street, there was quite a bit of very rapid erosion happening as a result of all that water and ice coming down. Heard from someone that the river maxed out at 90,000 cubic feet per second at the peak of that. And I think ADN actually posted a video on that as well, and it was pretty darn impressive.
Yeah. Hey, okay. Philip, what does the river normally run at? Like summer flow?
It varies. I would have to talk to my river guy on that, Steve May. But I want to say a high flow rate would be around 30.
Wow.
That would be considered high.
Ah, okay.
Like near flood stage.
That's pretty impressive. So speaking of Mahay, and speaking then when I hear that name, I think fishing also. Is there any projection for this upcoming season for fishing in that area?
Well, things are complicated on the King Salmon end, as has been reported on by quite a few news organizations. You know, king fishing, retention of king fishing is pretty much entirely shut down at this end of the valley. There is some limited catch and release on the Deshka River, which in years past has been the only place in this area where you could actually retain kings. So a lot of businesses are kind of having to recalibrate what they're doing. And of course, many guide services, or at least a handful, had already been promoting catch and release for king salmon. So maybe not as big of an adjustment for them, but definitely going to have an impact, and you're probably going to see a lot more trout fishing happening now.
Zaz, have you been following any of the fishery discussions, et cetera, from this end?
I haven't had time with my other assignments, but I am wondering what this horrible, cool, gray spring is doing for salmon returns. I mean, a lot of the, especially for kings, because they're out in the ocean for so long, there are other factors at play there in terms of their survival or not. But I am wondering what these conditions are doing that hopefully help.
Right. I've read the overall reviews and projections for commercial fishing, and of course that's one way to get a kind of side indication for sport fishing as well. So I share the concern. We had Amy Pettit's guest this week was the director of the Division of Agriculture, and he was commenting from an agricultural standpoint, not so much fishing, how this is a, in his experience over the last 15 years, a kind of a gray, cool start to agriculture. Others who he spoke to with more experience, more years here, said, this is the normal. You've just lived in a golden bubble for the last 15 years. And even though we have memory, I have memory of some cool springs, this one is starting out overall to be, as you've put it so nicely, Zaz, a little bit gray. Now, you have been involved in other stories, and I know that one of them that has been looked at quite carefully involves the ongoing trials that are associated with the Grunewald case. Any update there?
Well, the trial started on Monday after jury selection last week. There were some concerns, and I think the concerns remain about the venue. Just this case is so notorious that there were concerns that it would be difficult to find a fair and impartial jury. after all the media reports that preceded the trial. They seated a jury without a problem. There are still venue concerns. I think attorneys for both sides are being much more rigid in terms of what they say and what kind of comments are allowed to be picked up by media during the trial. But yeah, so the trial started in earnest Monday. And, you know, as is not surprising with a murder case, particularly one involving teenagers, it's grim. It's one of those stories that as a reporter, it takes a lot out of all of us just sitting through it. And obviously even it's far harder on Ben and Edie Grunwald, David Grunwald's parents, who have been sitting through all the proceedings. Ben Grunwald was not in court the first day when the photos of his son, the autopsy photo of his head and the photo of his body on the ground near the Kinnick River were shown, but Edie Grunwald was there, and I sat behind her, and she turned her head and just stared right at them. And there have been, you know, fairly high emotions at times. And, you know, each day there are kind of new details that come out in a case that's gotten so much attention. A few of us at least have poured through literally hundreds of court documents. It's a huge file with a lot of evidence, but there's still revelations. The latest, I suppose, is the contention that all of the teenagers who were charged in this murder, one of them is not charged with murder, were said to be hanging out in a shed near Palmer for several days after the murder happened. And I'd known that and just assumed that they were hiding, you know, and maybe someone was giving them food sometimes. But the 16-year-old girl who is, we were asked to keep her identity hidden, but she testified yesterday in court under oath that they were hanging out partying in there. They had alcohol, they had marijuana. There were videos shown of Eric Allmendinger, who is the only teenager currently on trial in this case, wrestling with somebody else, laughing hysterically. It was jarring. And, you know, I think that the backstory on this, the accusations in this case, has always been that there is this kind of loosely affiliated or tightly affiliated tribe of young people who are drifting and making really bad decisions at times. But, you know, at this point, these are all accusations. The jury probably, this trial will go through this month and probably in the first week in June. So there's obviously no verdict yet.
My understanding, if I'm correct, is that the marijuana aspect has been addressed in part.
There was a federal case involving Devin Peterson, who is the only defendant who's not charged directly with the murder because authorities say he wasn't there. But he was the one that they allegedly went to after the murder and asked for advice. And he concealed three weapons, authorities say were used in the one in the pistol whipping, one in the shooting, and gave them gas cans, apparently, allegedly, to use to burn David Grunwald's Bronco that same night. So, yes, he, as part of the investigation into the murder case, investigators seized his cell phone, Devin Peterson's phone, and found some videos on there that implicated him in some other cases involving two minor girls. So, yeah, he was charged with providing marijuana to them.
Okay.
The one was incapacitated, and there was an alleged sexual assault that occurred. He was not charged in the assault.
Got it. Okay. Whoa, this is going to go on for some time. I'm guessing another year or so. Is that anyone's projection?
Well, with all the different trials taking place, I've lost track. Dominic Johnson petitioned for a separate trial, two more trials starting this fall. Greg Heath, the Superior Court judge presiding over the Allmendinger trial, is retiring, so it probably won't be him.
Okay.
So that'll be interesting to have a different judge kind of having to be brought up to speed on what will be similar facts, I would think, with just different accusations as to who did what, who and what happened. But so, yes, I guess it's possible. I think that the additional trials are supposed to start this fall.
Okay.
But I do have, it's not good news, but at least it's not grim news, just breaking. So by 5 o'clock today when our first show is aired, and it has a Valley connection, Eowyn Ivey's book, Snow Child,
right,
which was nominated for a Pulitzer, has been made into a musical.
Right.
That was playing in Washington, D.C. and scheduled to come to Anchorage later this month, next week, and it's been canceled. The Alaska shows have been canceled. The Perseverance Theater just sent out a statement on that. And all they've said so far is that the logistics of the production proved to be too complicated. But
And I can just
probably know more later.
I can just add a little bit since 32 minutes ago I spoke with Awan. I happened to run into her at a local coffee shop, and she came up and said, and she wanted to make sure that we shared that. I'm glad you brought it up because of the three of us, I'm the only one that has actually seen the performance. We were able to be in Washington, D.C., and it was wonderful. And I know that there were many, many people who had purchased tickets already looking forward to having this done. The information that I have, a small amount that actually Awan has, is that it proved to be, as they were getting very close, 1 week away from arriving in Anchorage, logistically more expensive than they had thought. So a disappointment. We'll see what happens, whether it can be done at another time. And I'm sure the Perseverance Theaters people are particularly disappointed because it's a big opportunity. So, yeah, sorry to hear it. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, let's turn then, since we're talking about Perseverance, which is a presence both in Anchorage and Juneau, let's turn to Juneau because since we last spoke on Valley Edition, the legislature has finished its work for this session. Philip, from your perspective up there in Talkeetna, was there anything in particular that affects your area that was accomplished or that you would like to bring to the fore?
As far as area-specific legislation that would affect this area, I wasn't made aware of much going on in that regard. There, you know, of course, things that affect the entire state that would end up having knock-on effects on us.
Sure.
But, I was not made aware of any area-specific legislation in this round.
How about taking it from another perspective and say, we were picking up commentary about the fact that the legislature actually didn't go into a special session this year and has finished its work.
I would say, I would hazard to say that people are probably, you know, at least somewhat pleased about that given the way that the last few years have gone. You know, one interesting thing in this area is our rep here in District 10 is David Eastman, and locally can be a bit of a polarizing figure, much like in Juneau, I think. People tend to either really love him or really dislike him up here based on his record of often being the only no vote in the House of Representatives on things that would otherwise be rather uncontroversial. I believe Matt Buxton over at the Midnight Sun had kept a running tracker of how many times he was the lone no vote. And in other news on that, Mike Schauer, who was appointed to fill the seat vacated by Senator Dunleavy, former Senator Dunleavy, has decided he is going to run to retain that seat in the primary in August. So that race, you've got three Republicans in that race now.
Well, and that's a particularly interesting thing. Of course, we spoke earlier about the Democrat convention there in Talkeetna, but of course there's been an ongoing discussion, in particular because the head of the Republican Party, Tucker Babcock, has said that the three people that participated in the coalition in the House this past year who were calling themselves Republicans were not true Republicans, and there were efforts being made to not allow them to participate in the Republican primaries. So we have still some pressures that appear to resist bipartisanship. And I guess my other question is whether we have information about other people who are planning to run and take advantage of whatever opportunities there are there. Are you hearing anything else about people who are about to throw their hats in the ring?
Nothing beyond the vaguest of rumors at this point. Of course, you know, we've still got almost 2 weeks now for people to file and make that call, but nothing I'd be confident enough to say on air for sure.
Okay. Well, I understand that basically there is one item that will affect all of us here in the Valley, and that, of course, is in a relatively small capital budget to have some monies thrown, as some people have described it, a lifeline to the Kinnick Arm Bridge, and as well as another small amount, relatively speaking, we're talking still about millions of dollars, to continue some work toward the Juneau Access Road. Does the bridge raise people's interest in Talkeetna?
Yes and No. I mean, for one, it is, you know, further away. I think in regards to the fact that people would like to have an alternative way of getting to Anchorage, it does raise some interest, but when people talk about it up here, it's often in that kind of like, oh, is this going to be another project that we pour millions upon millions of dollars into and doesn't end up going anywhere, like has happened, you know, many times in the past. Now, this is the state spearheading this as opposed to the borough, so the legacy of the ferry doesn't come into play quite as much, but that sort of thing, since the ferry was meant to basically accomplish the same purpose, it still kind of gets linked with it in some ways, plus the attempts so far to get federal funding have met with mixed results, to say the least, on that.
Okay. So we've covered a variety of topics today, ranging from Talkeetna to more general topics. Zaz, you've been working on a variety of breaking issues. Is there any of those you'd like to bring to fore before we finish up today?
Boy, most of my list is courts and crime and snow child. blissfully. I will not be waking up to watch the royal wedding. On a personal note, maybe others. Maybe Philip is.
Philip?
I don't have a TV.
Well, but you do have a computer. And so maybe we should finish up with that, because that's an interesting question. It's been a thread through the news for a long, long time. Generally, what I've seen, positive. Where do you place the royal wedding in terms of newsworthy topic? Let's start with Zaz. I know you're not going to wake up to it, but what's your interest?
I think I'm at UGG level.
Okay. That's I can spell that. Philip, what's your sense of...
Personally, I'm inclined to agree with Zaz on this one. It's always been a bit of an eye roller for me. What's interesting is that I feel like the last time this happened, there was a lot more attention paid to it in the States. Maybe I'm just not seeing it this time around. But I don't know what it is. If our own domestic politics has gotten interesting enough that we don't care as much about what's happening, even though, you know, this is a case of an American marrying into the royal family.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you would think everybody would be all fired up about, and some people are. I have a cousin who is absolutely obsessed, and I'm sure that if I wanted a blow-by-blow, I could get one. But, yeah, I think it's, you know, kind of just a bit of a side curiosity right now.
Well, let me say that, in full disclosure, that I had the opportunity recently to interview the author of a book entitled American Princess. And up until that time, I might have shared some of your feelings. And then I read the book, and I began to realize that what we were talking about, and there was an even-handed treatment. The author of the book did a nice job of pointing out how history has led us to this point with the monarchy and also something of a background of Meghan Markle's history. And I found it fascinating after a while to realize that this was not, at least as the takeaway I had, that this wasn't just a singular event, but it represented a combination of an American entrepreneurial world view, if you will, in some form of creative forces, and a situation with a long history and a whole series of ways of doing things. And how these are coming together represents a bit of an insight, I think, into cultural differences or cultural accommodations. And so I can only say that if I look a little more deeply and see beyond just the couple and two people who are plastered everywhere, I sort of had a better sense, and I have a little bit greater interest.
That's a good point, Mike. I mean, Markle is a fascinating addition to the royal family, and, you know, an outspoken woman, a female role model, an American. So I will grant you that.
Okay. Well, I think we've reached the end of another edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Philip Manning for calling in. Thank you, Philip.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. And I did pull up the CFS numbers for the Susitna River. Last reading, 17,500.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Good question, Zaz, and good response, Philip. And thank you, Zaz Hollander, for also calling in today.
Anytime.
All right. Take care, and we'll talk again in the following weeks.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.